Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Go Boys. Coming up on the show, we'll do a little football. Mike Sando of The Athletic, do a little off-season review the draft. Now that we're a couple weeks away, we can look at it with fresh eyes, go over some of the teams he thinks are overrated, underrated, who he thinks might be flying under the radar a little bit. So excited to talk to Mike, always a great guest, but we'll start with basketball. OKC is playing Dallas at the moment, and we'll spend time on that series, you know, going forward as it warrants, but I wasn't even going to talk about the games tonight. I was just going to talk about the Friday games, which I'll get to in a moment. We had an absolute stunner, and maybe it shouldn't be a stunner, but the Celtics just give you so many reasons not to trust them, and they pull off just what they've done the past couple of years, which is just a complete no-show at home. And I think the first score I saw was 14-5 Celtics. If you're a huge favorite, they killed them in game one. They had their little hiccup against the Heat in game two, but they blew them out every other game since. You know, they rolled against the Cavs in game one. That was never a game. They'll be fine. And Cavs kind of creep back into it, tied at the half. Brown had a terrible play before the half. They're up one. They're about to hold for the last shot. He gives the ball away. Then he fouls for no reason. I don't know which was worse. Tied at the half. All right. You know what? It's on your radar, but no big deal. But the Cavs hit 7 of 10 from 3 in the third quarter. Celtics go 0 for 8, and that's basically the game. And it wasn't a game going into the fourth quarter. I mean, Cavs led by 12 going into the fourth, so they're within shouting distance. But 118-94 final. Cavs win by 24, led by as many as 30. And boy, the end of that game was a who's who of who's that playing? Who's still in the league? But as both benches emptied late, Mitchell was tremendous. I don't think the Celtics are any real danger of losing the series. And it is strange how a lot of these hiccups, a lot of these just no-shows come on their home court where they've been fine on the road, but for whatever reason, they've lost big game after big game, and they lost big games to the Heat where home court didn't matter this year, last year, and previous years. But then they go on the road and they're fine. So, you know, maybe does Cleveland, is it possible we go back to Cleveland, go back to Boston after four and it's 2-2, and then, hey, best of three, anything can happen. Tatum rolls an ankle, I guess, but I think Boston's still in good shape to win this series, but just a shocker. And you know, I know a lot of it was the three-pointers, but Cleveland only made five more than Boston. Cleveland made 13. Boston made 8. Cleveland just outplayed them. Boston's almost like a pitcher. They've got a great fastball. When you hit their fastball, they don't have a second pitch. They don't take well to getting punched. You start to hit them, and they just they can't maneuver. They can't pivot and just, you know, have a plan B. I don't want to blame the coach. We lose by 30. I don't know how much of this goes on the coach, but just not an impressive performance. By the way, Tatum and Brown, it'll be interesting if they actually win a championship in here in, you know, a month or so, because as far as a duo, I mean, how much evidence is there that they're just not great players? Both of them are good players and they want to be, you know, looked at as great. People want to propel them as great because they're Celtics. They've been on great teams, winning records, good teams, not great teams, but very good teams. And just time after time, they have these no-shows, but just a completely dominant performance by Cleveland. Give them credit now. And Cleveland, I think, is playing with a little house money too. They can be fast and loose. Hey, if they lost to Orlando in round one and they were down 18 in game seven, they easily could have after winning that game and winning it comfortably at the end. If they lost to Orlando round one, disaster, people get fired, people get traded, blow it up kind of thing. Now that they're in round two, hey, nobody expects them to win. Big underdogs, they can come out fast and lose. So Boston will probably get, well, that's interesting. I think Boston will probably get both of them in Cleveland, but hey, who knows? Maybe we have a series and, you know, if you're Cleveland, just, I think this put Boston in a game seven. And again, we're two wins away from that, but put Boston in game seven where you bring it down to one game and if you're the inferior team, a one game sample is what you want. Pressure on Boston. Boy, there would be all the pressure in the world on Boston if that were the case. And we're a long way from there, but we're only two wins away from there. If just find a way to split the next four and put some pressure on Boston, who is, had a habit of falling on their faces, especially at home. So interesting. Maybe we'll keep an eye on that in terms of a series going forward. Maybe that will be something worth keeping an eye on. But we will start here we'll continue here with the Knicks and the Pacers. I thought going into this series, Knicks would win the first two at home, probably get a split in Indy 3-4, then either close in five or it'll be 2-2, and then Knicks win in six, where they steal game six in Indy, where I thought they'd win one of the first three in Indy, hold serve in terms of being their home court. Now with the Knicks injuries, just running out of bodies here. I mean, I don't know if the Knicks are going to be able to suit up five guys. Ananobi's going to be done for the series. I can't imagine him coming back. Brunson's banged up. You're going to have to put Achiuwa in the starting lineup, and they're just going to run out of bodies. Now I really don't think they get a game in Indy. I don't. I think we're probably coming back 2-2. I still think the Knicks win the series, but before when I was at Knicks in five or six, now I'm probably Knicks in seven, and it's not going to be easy just because again, you're just running out of players. Ananobi was playing great in game two. He gets hurt, and I know they're gritty. I know they have the home crowd. And by the way, Indy whining about the refs. They had a beef in game one. They had no complaint in game two. Make your free throws. Defend better. They've done nothing to stop Brunson. Carlisle, I understand you're politicking for your team, but his comments were pretty embarrassing after the game. Where, oh, they missed 29 calls in the Knicks' favor. I mean, give me a break. Make your free throws. Do a better job playing defense. They just – that was a really poor effort in game two. But I do think Indy probably gets both of these. It's going to be hard for the Knicks to win a game on the road with this mass unit. They've got Brunson, who's turned into just a tremendous Knick. Best Knick of all time might be a push, might be pushing it, but it's not pushing it that much. A couple more wins here, get him to a conference finals, and God, man, if they ever got to a finals, he's on the short list. Put it that way. He's on the short list, and what he does in these games is incredible. I just don't know if they're going to steal one of these in Indy. I still pick them to win the series. First of all, they're up 2-0, and they have Brunson, and they have a seventh game at home. And look at it this way. They only need to win one out of the next four to be playing a game seven in their building. Now, hey, you're up 2-0. You don't want any part of a game seven, but it might come to that with their injuries. As far as game three, I think the Pacers will win. I think they'll get a friendlier whistle. If I had to take it or lay it, I guess I'd lay it. Knicks seemed to play in a lot of close games both ways, even though the other night was close. Game two was close, but they pulled away at the end. They seem to – they're competitive enough where they don't pull away. And yeah, they're competitive enough where they're not going to get blown out, but they're not good enough where they're going to pull away. So I'd probably lean towards laying the seven. I think the better way to play it, you can do a same game parlay at DraftKings with all Brunson's unders. They're under 35.5 points, under 4.5 rebounds, under 6.5 assists with the Pacers to win the game. It's plus 450. There might be a scenario where the Pacers have a big lead third quarter, 15-point game, 18-point game. At some point, Tibbs got to get these guys some rest. You can't chase your tail. If you're down 15, 18, middle of third quarter, you might say, you know what, let's not run Brunson on the ground. He's banged up anyway. Let's just give our guys a breather. I know that's not how he thinks, but some parlay with fading Brunson where there's a possibility of Brunson getting benched early just to preserve minutes if Pacers have a big lead, I think is probably a way I would play it. The other game, I like Minnesota. I think whoever you pick, I do worry we're all pouring dirt on Denver a little early. I do think whoever you pick, if you lose, you're going to feel like an idiot because, man, why did we count out Denver? Of course, they were going to come out fired up. Of course, they weren't going to go out like this. You got Jokic. They're the champs. Of course, they were going to bounce back after everyone counted them out. But if Minnesota wins and you pick Denver, you say, what am I looking at? Minnesota's clearly the better team, and I just overthought it. So I tend to go with plan B, option B. I think Minnesota is the better team. I think they're just more athletic. Denver just looks worn down. Minnesota's too physical. I think it was Ethan Strauss on Bill Simmons' podcast the other day was saying, hey, maybe we didn't put enough stock into the idea that the rules are being enforced differently in Minnesota's physicality, where that's going to be a bigger edge over a team like Denver, and they're more of a finesse team, and you know, you're allowed to mug people. You want the length, the athleticism of Minnesota. That's not a bad point. Hadn't thought of that way. Minnesota at home, that team, you know, hasn't had a lot of success. That fan base hasn't had a lot of success. They are going to be out for blood tomorrow. Now, sometimes that can work against you where you're a little overexcited. You play, you know, too hyped up, and it can kind of, you know, go in the opposite direction. But I think Minnesota rolls here. I think it was Denver up by four in game one at halftime, and Denver had their moments where, you know, this is not game two is not representative of the gap in these teams, but game two was so alarming. It's almost like the game five of Mavs Clippers where, boy, the Mavs beat them by 30 something. It's hard to turn around and pick the Clippers. That's the kind of scenario I'm looking at here where it's hard to pick Denver after what I saw in game two where Denver needed it and they were never in the game. They were just completely out everything in every single category. So I think Minnesota wins, and I think Minnesota's probably headed for a sweep. They just look so much better than Denver. I'm rooting for Denver to get back into it. Now, I always root for my picks to be right over everything, but just neutral fan standpoint, you do want to see Denver make a run, Jokic make a run, have this be a series. Yeah. And we've had a lot of these series we're expected to be good from the start of the playoffs till now that just haven't materialized. Maybe it'll turn out the opposite where Cleveland-Boston ends up being a good series and we get drama where we didn't expect it. But I thought Denver-Minnesota was a long series. And obviously, if Minnesota wins game three, that's we're looking at a sweep. We're looking at a very short series. So NBA is interesting. I would look to fade Brunson. I think the Pacers win. I think they probably get both in Indy and sets up a best of three. I would pencil the Knicks through. I would put the Knicks through. I do think they're going to win, but I just think they're so beat up right now where it does give you some pause that maybe Indy can get back into this series. So that's the NBA. Coming up, we'll do some NFL with Mike Sando. That is next. This is the Should A Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Shoot a Bit More podcast. Let's talk a little football. You can catch him at The Athletic, the Football GM podcast. He's the best in the business. He's Mike Sando, and he joins us now. Mike, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, good to be here. Will, how you doing?
I am good. Let's get into it because, you know, after the draft, you know, the reactions are fresh, they're raw, but we've had 2 weeks to kind of sit on everything. I'll just start with this and let's leave out the Falcons for a minute. We'll get to the Falcons. When you talk to people around the league, who is the one team that's kind of had a bad offseason where, you know, you talk to people and say, wow, I don't know what this team is doing?
Okay, so that's a little bit of a different question. I think there's a couple categories for these, for a team like this. Like, I don't think Miami has screwed up their offseason by making bad moves. I just think it's been a rough offseason to be in the position they're in where you haven't even paid your quarterback yet. You're probably going to have to, and you're subtracting really the types of players that you would normally want to invest in. I think the reading of the market on Christian Wilkins, you know, not using the franchise tag, probably had good reasons to do that, but he ended up just really cashing in. Wouldn't you rather have him on the franchise tag if you could have? Again, they have other dynamics, things they have to concern themselves with. They got a quarterback contract to deal with. I think it's tough when you have guys like Wilkins, Robert Hunt, even Van Ginkle to some degree, just walking out of your building. They would normally be the types of guys you'd probably want to have for the long term. So there's no one move that I think they bungled. I just think for a team that hasn't really made a dent in the playoffs yet, that has a lot of talent, you wonder, like, is their window getting smaller already before they've done anything?
Yep, that's an interesting one. I thought you might say Dallas. I think there's been a perception that, hey, Philly and Dallas kind of neck and neck. Philly had a weird season, but maybe Philly with their draft, with their offseason, has surpassed Dallas. Is that something you'd agree with? Is that something that's kind of a consensus around the league?
I think it's interesting. We talk to people about Dallas. It's you know, there's a lot of frustration, it seems like, among fans and on the outside of this team ought to be doing something. But I think, you know, you could make that case probably within the league on the contracts. Maybe they would have got some of these contracts done. But most people in the league seem to think, hey, Dallas already has their kind of horses, right? They have their stars. You're not going to get that where they're picking in the draft. It's not wise necessarily. They can't go out and get that in free agency. They got a bunch of their own guys to pay. So they're in a little bit of a position, you know, somewhat like Miami, but they've already paid their quarterback. They're already doing this with a quarterback making a ton of money. And by the way, they've made a little bit of a dent in the postseason. They've at least, you know, won in the postseason. Tough loss to the Packers, obviously, but they've, you know, been around a little bit more. And they've got, I believe, one of the three best records in the league over the last three seasons. I think so. I think Kansas City's up there. I think they're up there as well. And now it's just a matter of, you know, can you hold it together, maybe get a little bit better defensively? I don't know if that's possible with Mike Zimmer coming in there and maybe getting a little bit sounder defensively against the run, that sort of a thing. But they've kind of made their bed. I don't know what more they could have done as far as adding. As far as what they lost, I mean, I didn't see it. They didn't have, like, Christian Wilkins walking out of the building, right? They kept Micah Parsons. He didn't leave, as far as I know. So, you know, they just sort of are what they are, maybe in a little bit of a holding pattern.
Yeah, I just think it's the idea that, hey, Philly had a good draft. They addressed some needs. Mm-hmm. And again, none of us are really qualified, at least not me, to evaluate these drafts for the most part. But that at least is the perception that, hey, Philly, you got a couple corners. Maybe you can be a little better on defense. The idea that, you know, anytime you bring back a guy like Zeke, who's an older running back, I think people kind of roll their eyes. So I think it's those kind of moves combined.
Yeah, I get that on the running back thing. But they put no money into it. It wasn't like they paid Zeke. Right. I mean, I think if Zeke had a different name, and played for a different team before and was the same player, people might be like, okay, you know, at least they didn't go all in on a running back. So, you know, the Eagles always win the perception game. They always win the draft. It always seems to fall just amazingly perfectly. And I think is a credit to them. I think their processes are pretty good. But, you know, last year, everyone was talking about how I can't believe Jalen Carter fell to them. And I don't think people would say that's a bad pick or anything, but it's not like everyone's like, oh my gosh, Jalen Carter just took the league by storm. Their defense was incredible with them, right? The Eagles are, wow. How come they're the team that picks up Kevin Byard? Why can't my team do that? And then you go like a year later, like Kevin Byard, who's he on now? Is he with Chicago? Right? That sort of thing. So some of these moves that seem super amazing, They don't always just pay off with the huge dividends. I love how it fell for the Eagles in the corner situation in the draft. I mean, I think they basically kind of accomplished what Detroit did without having to spend as much, right? Without having to trade up and give for future picks. And they did an amazing job getting the three mid-round picks for next year. So I like a lot about what Philly does. We'll see, though, on game day, how much that really translates to making them better.
It's such a great point because there's an old saying that, hey, anytime Alabama recruits a kid, if he's a 4-star, he gets bumped up to a 5-star just because it's Alabama. So there is a little bit of it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, same thing where the Ravens drafts him. Oh, man, the Ravens picked him. He must be good. So I do think there's something to that, too.
A little bit to that. And I'm not knocking Philly because I do think they have good process. You know, I think that I think they generally operate pretty smartly and they don't give up too much for the things that they get. But they have some question marks there too. You know, with their team, it's a little bit of transition. And, you know, well, Jalen Hurts is one of those question marks too. So,
yep, no doubt. Quarterback tiers. I'm sure you've gotten started on that. I think late July, early August is usually when they come out, right around July. So I'm sure you've gotten going here. Before you know it, we're going to look up and we're not going to be that far from training camp. Who's the quarterback or the one or two quarterbacks? And I have a couple in mind, so I'd be curious what you think. But who are the quarterbacks where you're fascinated to see where they fall here when these lists come out?
Okay, totally fascinated with Brock Purdy. You know, last year with Purdy, we didn't get a real true reading on him because, you know, in the tiers, you know, tier one, obviously Mahomes, whatever, tier two, you're thinking, you know, it's been kind of a Stafford type guy, really good quarterback, right? Tier three, maybe has been a Kirk Cousins or Jimmy G, right? Somebody like that. Well, Purdy and four is kind of like, maybe not a starter, or we haven't seen enough. We don't know. So a lot of people sort of bailed out last year on Brock Purdy, gave him a four, and it was kind of like, hey, he didn't finish the season. We haven't seen enough. I want to see a whole year. So it made him look lower than people actually thought of him by giving him a four, because four could also be bad, but it was kind of a four, not enough information. So he finished last year like right between three and four, right on that border. This year, the cards are going to be on the table. The voters can't hide in the tier four, not enough information. They're going to have to declare. So what do they declare, right? Amazing season, some bumps in the road, some debate about how good he really was in the playoffs. And, you know, they had a nice comeback win, but really what did he do, right? Are people going to stay anchored to what they thought of him? Are they going to give Shanahan all the credit? Does he rock it up into tier two? Is he high tier two? Sometimes we see these guys come off seasons like that. They go right to the top of tier two, like Jalen Hurts sort of did. Or when Lamar Jackson was younger, or you know, when Cam Newton came onto the scene, these guys have a great year. They rock it. They don't go to tier one, but they rock it high in tier two. Is that going to happen with Brock Purdy, or is he going to languish a little bit and not get the credit?
This is a betting show. I wish there were betting odds on this. It would be so much fun. I don't know that that'll ever happen, but I would make my bet would be he's bottom of tier two. There's enough negative opinions that bring him down. I think bottom of tier two.
Yeah, that could be fair. That could be fair. I think that sounds better to me than having him just still be in tier three. It felt like he was better than that to me. The production's there. So at the same time, I'm sure some will say, okay, drop him and parachute him into random offenses, see how he does, right? So we'll find out.
I have an annoying habit of answering my own questions. Would you like to hear who I am fascinated by?
Yes, absolutely.
You just hit on one of them. Hurts is one of them. But the two I had in mind, I thought you were going to say one of these two guys, Tua and Herbert, because Herbert's been a darling. I think he even got, was either last year or the year before, I was like, wow, he got a lot of love. Didn't have a good year. I wonder if there's you know, more questions around the league about Herbert and Tua, because Tua had great stats, but I wonder, you know, the Kansas City game was so bad and there was just enough warts with Tua and Herbert starting up with it. So those two guys are going to be fascinating to me. Do you get the sense Harbaugh, speaking of Herbert, do you get the sense Harbaugh will win right away?
I think he'll be competitive right away. I don't know that they're going to make a push or advance in the playoffs or that sort of a thing. I think he'll give them an immediate identity. They'll have a style of play that will be noticeable right away. I'm not sure how good they're going to be defensively. They weren't that good there before. I don't think it was all just a scheming issue of Brandon Staley. I think some of that was, you know, the players that they had. So how much can they come up in that side of it? Because when Jim Harbaugh went to the 49ers, they had real good defensive talent, a lot of good young talent. So I do think that is still remains to be seen. But I think they'll be, you know, I would think they would, you know, I might go with it that they have a winning record. I might go that far and just say they can get to 9 wins.
It does feel like there's some parallels between when he took over Michigan trying to catch Ohio State, where now he's trying to catch the Chiefs. And all right, he wasn't there right away, and he inched there and inched there. You do feel like, look, with him, eventually, you know, he's going to kind of get there.
Yeah, I do too. I think that a big part of the head coach is just setting the vision for who you want to be. I think you can always debate whether or not it's the right strategy. But look at Detroit. You know, Detroit knows who they want to be. And we can pick apart, you shouldn't draft running back this high or take a linebacker in the first round. Those are all fair points, fair criticisms. But when you know what you want to be, you have a chance to succeed in being that. And Detroit's done that, and Harbaugh will do that.
Does Belichick get another job?
I don't know. I really go back and forth in that moment. It only takes one, but I think a lot comes along with hiring Belichick that is hard for a lot of organizations to do. So I might look and just see what happens with the New York teams, you know, this year. I think those are two places. Certainly Bill Belichick has great ties to the Giants and affinity for ownership there. Depending just kind of what happened there this year, what the fallout was, you know, is that a type of place where there would be a comfort level to bring him in? They've had Tom Coughlin there, right? And so this would be maybe a little bit of an extension of Tom Coughlin and could be a fit. We'll see. But those were a couple of places that I thought, yeah, you never know.
Do you feel like this media tour has helped where he just, I don't know, there was a perception among his detractors that, hey, he's old, he's seen all, he's passed, the game is passing by, but you see him on TV doing the draft, doing the roast, doing these things. He does look a little more younger, vibrant. There's a little more energy to him. Do you think that's helped him?
I think it helps him a lot, you know, because there are two Bill Belichicks. And if you've ever, you know, I haven't had a million interactions with him, but I've had several where, you know, it wasn't an interview situation. And we were just talking about, he loves to talk about football history or, you know, that type of stuff. Who's up for the Hall of Fame or those types of discussions. He's great. You know, really engaging. He's funny. He puts on that mask, you know, when he goes into the press conferences, because he doesn't want to talk about his team. He's just kind of he's sour about that. He's not going to do it. But I think it's good for him that people can see another side and like him and see there's a likable side too.
Yep, totally. Totally agree with that. And it'll be interesting, you know, if he just, because he's going to want a quarterback. He's not going to want to just take any other job. So that's an interesting, I mean, I would bet on him getting one, but I'm not like certain about it, which is kind of crazy. We would have been crazy to think, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that he'd have a hard time getting a job. Now that we're a couple weeks removed from the draft, the Penix pick to Atlanta, is it something where people think on it for a couple weeks and say, hey, it's not that bad, and they got their bases covered? Or is it as crazy among people in football as the media thought it was and the rest of us thought it was when it happened?
Yeah, you know, I think it's crazy. I think I did a couple pieces after the draft where I talked to, you know, executives around the league, and I'm going to guess I talked to 15 at least executives around the league. I didn't find one that thought it was a good move that made sense. Now, they like Michael Penix, some of them. I mean, it's no vote against him. He may be a good quarterback. And if he is, people will say, well, you shouldn't have criticized it. But I think that misses the point of just the entirety of the offseason plan to really do that, pay that much for Kirk Cousins, and then do this when you really, you know, could have done a different quarterback that was cheaper. Brought in Penix, it would make sense. You could have used some of that money you're giving to Kirk Cousins for other things on your roster that you need defensively or whatever, and been in probably a better situation. So, you know, I did have one conversation with one person who defended it. That was yesterday or this week. I did Bill Polian's show on Sirius, and Bill made a point that basically, it's a lot easier to bring on a quarterback now because the salaries are so small, right? Back in the day, you sign a quarterback in the top 10, you're paying him $40 or $50 million, you know, and you're really locked in with a smaller cap. So, you know, his point was, hey, for what you have to pay Michael Penix, it's fine to have him sit for a couple of years and have Cousins play, and you can have the best of both worlds. You can get Cousins and win some games now, and you can have a guy for the future. But that's definitely an outlier opinion among the people that I spoke with.
Yeah, and look, I've tried to make the case for it just to, you know, just to be fair, hey, maybe let's look at this from a contrarian standpoint. But I mean, he was a coin flip to go in the first round. You're picking him eighth, so it's not only the need of the position, but the fact that you reached for him is just, man, shocking. The age, which maybe he's a little older one. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think they're all getting pushed up higher, the quarterbacks are, and that has really started under the CBA with the wage scale. Like I said, you're not totally, you know, locked in to take one early, where when you take one, you know, taking one eighth is not what taking one eighth used to be in relation to the cap and your resources. So I think that's why they're getting pushed up.
Well, especially last year. I mean, the last year, the quarterback play was so bad. I remember doing these shows week in, week out. Man, I can't remember the quarterback play ever being this bad. There are a lot of quarterback injuries. Plus, the draft next year, quarterback-wise, is not perceived to be great. So you add those two. Hey, if I don't have a quarterback now and I can't get one next year, you know, I gotta get one at some point. Last one before you get out of here. Anyone that you think is underrated, overrated going into next season? I know Texans and Packers are going to be everyone's darling upstart teams from last year. But anybody you have a strong opinion on either way?
I like that. I like that. Now, since we're taping, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to cheat and I'm going to look at the teams because this will help me. Okay. I like a couple of these teams at the bottom to go over. I'm kind of looking at Denver and Carolina. Denver, I see at 5.5. I just think, even though I had some criticisms of Sean Payton in his first year and just kind of how he handled himself, sometimes it was a bit much. I do think he's a good coach. I do think having a year there and you know, kind of get moving on from the Russell Wilson thing, which was obviously uncomfortable for him. I think it's rare for the really good coach to have a super bad year. If you just kind of look historically, you don't see a lot of 3-win seasons by the guys that are really good coaches. So I think he'll find a way to go above the 5.5. I think Carolina might too. You know, just I think they were so bad, off the rails bad last year, that I don't know that they could be that bad trying again. So yeah, those might be a couple teams at one extreme that I wouldn't be surprised if they were a little bit over that. So that's probably where I'd look.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's just funny after all these years of the Patriots being great to look at these odds, these numbers, and Patriots at 4.5 wins. My, how things change.
Yeah, you know, another one that's interesting to me is I think you were talking about sometimes we just give benefit of the doubt. Like Baltimore is tied for the lead at 11.5, and I think we just do pencil them in. We've had a lot of changes though too, you know. So like I wouldn't be docking them at all if they just had won 10 games, right? They were super dominant last year, but tons of changes on defensive staff, tons of some personnel changes, you know, and then also the rest of the league, you know, has a look at their offense now, which changed last year. So, you know, will teams get a little bit better defending them? I just think that's a high number for a team going through some transition, even though you can usually take them to the bank.
Yeah, 12 wins is a hell of a lot of wins in the NFL, especially you're in a division. Pittsburgh, a lot of people think could be better. Burrow will be healthy. Figure Cincinnati gets back on track. Cleveland's got a good team. And you know what? Lamar misses 3 or 4 games, you're probably not winning 12 games. So yeah, that under might be a good look.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it will be. I think that makes sense.
Mike, you're the best. The Athletic Football GM Podcast. Where can everyone look for your stuff?
Definitely at theathletic.com on the app, and at Sando NFL. You'll find me on X.
All right. So end of July here, we'll have the tiers out, and hopefully we'll have you back on here down the road, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Look forward to it every year.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. That'll do it. Thank you to Mike Sando. We'll be back Monday. Talk a little more NBA, MLB. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. See you guys then.